Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another jam-packed episode of The New World next week, which, of course, you can find all the related material, audio, video, supplemental links, and all the sources cited at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, let's get right into it with our first story from TheHindu.com that notes, becoming a full member, India will strengthen the SCO, and that is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. India will lend more weight to the Shanghai Regional Group when it joins as a full member. India has something substantial to offer to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in terms of strengthening the group, said the foreign minister at a joint press conference with his Russian and Chinese counterparts after the 11th trilateral meeting of the RIC format, meaning Russia, India, China. India, with its billion-strong population, plays a very important role in the Shanghai Regional Group, whereas it has had an observer status, and therefore India has expressed the desire to be involved in the organization much more than it is today. Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, said Moscow supported granting full membership to India, as well as to Pakistan, which has also sent in its application. Earlier this year, Russian diplomats said the SCO still lacked consensus on expansion. Mr. Lavrov welcomed India's participation as observer in a range of SCO activities, including the Energy Club, and its joining the SCO anti-terrorist structure, as well as other projects in transportation, new technologies, agriculture, science, and education. James, I do have a couple of related notes, but I'm going to throw it back to you to expand on what the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is.
Well, it's an organization that was founded and really came into being around the same time as the U.S. and NATO was doing their strike in Afghanistan, which is obviously a threat to the incursion of, the old Soviet backyard and, of course, the Soviet graveyard of the 80s. So it was interesting in the exact wake of that, the SCO came together as a type of... At first, it was just a regional economic consolidation. It wasn't meant to be a type of NATO counterbalance, or so they said, but it's increasingly looking that way. And we've seen increasingly larger and more sophisticated regional cooperation security drills, so military drills and things being done by SCO members. And Russia and China are just about to hold a joint naval exercise in the Yellow Sea, for example. So it is more and more looking like a superpower kind of block to counterbalance NATO and what it's doing. It's extremely important. I really do hope people are keeping their eye on the SCO and what's going on, because what we're witnessing really is the creation of the next version of the Cold War that we were looking at with the U.S. and Soviet Union. Basically, this is going to be NATO versus the SCO, and it looks like in every respect it's shaping up that way. And it's such a huge thing to have India and Pakistan both looking to gain membership into this regional security organization, and their ties are increasingly closer together in line with China and Russia and their interests, which is a huge, significant, and very detrimental turn for America and the American power bloc and NATO and all of that. So it's all of these pieces on the chessboard lining up against each other. We're witnessing the creation of the narrative of the 21st century, and whether or not this is all completely and utterly staged behind the scenes or whatever, it doesn't really matter, because when the bombs are raining down on people's heads, I suppose it doesn't matter if the leaders are just lying to you about the way that this has been set up. So absolutely, if we see a 21st century type of superpower two-block situation shaping up, it will be NATO versus the SCO, given everything that's happening here. And India and Pakistan gaining membership would be very, very large. So I hope people are keeping their eye on it.
And it happens almost imperceptibly. I recall probably going back to 2006 or 7, first hearing about Shanghai Cooperation Organization from folks like Webster Tarpley and Daniel Abramson. But again, it happens so sort of stealthily in a way, but these are big moves on the grand chessboard. James, in a related note to India, I saw this in the New York Times the other day, and we'll provide a link to reason.com for kind of a great breakdown on this of what the experts say. Children of immigrants to U.S. expatriating themselves, or so you want to move back to India. And this ties into, again, you know, the brain drain that countries had generally saw leaving those countries and coming to the States. now it's in reverse as this ship of state appears to be sinking. We'll move to our second story, James, where our main two sources come from washingtonsblog.com and also the economiccollapseblog.com. Giant banks now 30% bigger than when Dodd-Frank financial reform law was passed, or the too-big-to-fail banks are now much bigger and much more powerful than ever. For years, many high-level economists and financial experts have said that unless we break up the giant banks, our economy will never recover, real reform will be blocked, and democracy and the rule of law will be corrupted. So how did the government respond to the financial crisis, which started in 2007? Let the giant banks get even bigger. As Bloomberg notes, the five banks that held assets equal to 43% of the U.S. economy in 2007 before the financial crisis and the bank bailout now control assets that equal 56% of the U.S. economy. Bloomberg, quote, 2 years after Obama vowed to eliminate the danger of financial institutions becoming too big to fail, the nation's largest banks are bigger than they were before the credit crisis. Five banks, and of course it's the usual suspects, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and Goldman Sachs. They held $8.5 trillion in assets at the end of 2011, equal to 56% of the U.S. economy, this according to our friends at the Federal Reserve. 5 years earlier, before the financial crisis, the largest bank's assets amounted to 43% of the U.S. output, and now we're noting 56%, at least on its face, on paper, what's being discussed openly that we know. Market participants believe that now nothing has changed, that too big to fail is fully intact, so said Gary Stern, former president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. This specter is eroding faith in Obama's pledge that taxpayer-funded bailouts are a thing of the past. It's also exposing him to criticism from Federal Reserve officials, Republicans, and Occupy Wall Street supporters who see the concentration of bank power as a threat to economic stability. As the articles go on, and in closing, it includes former chief economist of the International Monetary Fund. Some presidents of regional Federal Reserve banks have expressed criticism of too big to fail. But the most powerful federal bank, the New York Federal Reserve, and Bernanke's Federal Open Market Committee, as well as Tim Geithner's Treasury Department, have done everything possible to ensure that the giant banks become too bigger to fail. And I'd like to, again, thank washingtonsblog.com, I believe, for coining that, too bigger to fail. James?
Well, thanks, Tim, for coining that, but no thanks for that being the case. Because as we know, these five megabanks are a giant gun to the head of the American economy. And unfortunately, that gun has just turned into a bazooka. I mean, it's ridiculous to think that that in the wake of all of this crisis, they have only grown and grown. Exactly as we were saying, this is all about the entire point of this entire economic collapse has been the consolidation of financial power, and that's shown by the fact that all of these reforms that they've put in. Oh, won't the government come in and regulate everything better again? Oh, please, is only making the situation even more dangerous, even worse, and they're putting even more power in the hands of these banksters, exactly as predicted. Again, it's nothing surprising, but it's nonetheless horrifying to think about this, because we know in the immediate wake of the Lehman collapse that the banksters were going around saying, if you don't pass this bailout, the whole economy is going to fall apart. It's going to be mayhem and chaos and terror in the streets, and people are going to be dying left and right. And they were telling congressmen about this behind the off the record, behind the scenes. Congressmen were coming out on the House floor talking about this. We were told there'd be martial law on the streets if we didn't pass this bailout. And of course, we saw when the Congress originally, on the first vote of the bailout, rejected it, what happened? The stock market immediately plunged 600 points, because again, that's just another lever of control over people's psyches more than anything, as if the stock market really indicates the real value of the economy and not just what phony numbers they want to put up in front of your eyes today. Oh, look, it plunged 600 points. I guess we better pass this bailout bill and give the bankers hundreds of billions nominally. They're trillions when we actually add up all of the different benefits. And it's just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse until people figure out the scheme behind it and the fact that these crises are designed to give them more power. So the answer cannot possibly be calling for more regulation from the government. Oh, please, won't the government make it even worse? And on that exact note, that's going to be the topic of my podcast episode coming out this Saturday, talking about regulation and the government. So people can stay tuned for that.
We can look to today in the news, James, and it's April 18th here still in the States, that the whole economy rests on the physical health of Warren Buffett. And we'll provide that link for you. The other thing I want to mention, James, before we quickly move to our third story is again, these sort of imperceptible things that kind of recede into the background. Recall the seamless transition and transfer of power from puppet Bush to puppet Obama, and they both helped push these bailout bills. It wasn't one, it wasn't the other. It was a seamless transition all through the selection kind of campaign, which included, of course, you know, secret moves to Bilderberg meetings and other things. But it was a passing of the football. Anymore, you can't blame one puppet any more than the other. And again, that's how this fake political paradigm works. Our third and final story this week, James, I saw in print in the New York Times the other day, and it really caught my eye. And I think it ties into some of the other things we've discussed here, as well as on Food World Order. In the largest collaborative study of the brain to date, scientists using imaging technology at more than 100 centers worldwide have for the first time zeroed in on genes that they agree play a role in intelligence and memory. This would be crowdsourcing, helping brain imaging research. Scientists working to understand the biology of brain function, and especially those using brain imaging, a blunt tool, have been badly stalled. But this new work involving more than 200 scientists lays out a strategy for breaking this logjam. The findings appear in a series of papers published online Sunday in the journal Nature Genetics. And one of the lead researchers, Paul Thompson, notes what's really new here is this movement toward crowdsourcing, brain research. This is an example of social networking in science, and it gives us a power we have not had. Now, I'll spare you some of the actual nuts and bolts of the research about brain imaging and memory, but we'll provide those links for you. But it notes at the very end, again from Thompson, it means sharing your data, pooling everything, and this is not usually how scientists work. James, I'll provide the links to the two parts of this series, I believe, that have been published so far in Nature Genetics, but gosh, wouldn't you know it, we can't download them. They're not for our eyes to see, James, as we joked recently on Food World Order that people in white lab coats have got it all figured out, and how dare you want to inspect their research. Some of the related notes: a retraction crisis hits scientific journals. From allgov.com, three scientific journals have published articles over the past 2 years warning of the rise in retractions and misconduct by researchers who have fudged results. And we'll also provide information on a group called the Wellcome Group that's actually pushing for the opening of all of this research. James?
A lot to say there, very little time to say it. So I'll just say that, I support the growing movement among scientists to try to get more open access to these journals so that the public can actually look at these things that are supposed to be just for the revered priestly scientific class. Because as people who've been watching the climate debate, for example, know, the so-called laymen are having a greater and greater effect. Blogs are becoming more and more a venue for real scientific discussion. And of course, the priestly academic class don't like that. But at any rate, there is a growing movement to get more access to these journals. And on the brain imaging and memory things, there's too many topics to get into here. But I just fear the bioreductionism of it all. But I'll just leave it at that for now.
And of course, yeah, there are guys from Yale talking about genomics in these articles. So again, that's the article itself is perhaps the silver lining, is the dirt that lies within. James, that perhaps sets us up for, again, our Food World Order episodes on Corbett Report Radio and my own live radio show coming up this weekend, expanding and continuing my coverage of just the Trayvon, Titanic, Manson, Hunger Games, all of those memes swirling around, as well as entering into the 420 area of the mass murder contagion. And I'll have guest Andy Colvin to break down all of these sort of pop culture goings on.
Looking forward to it. Take care.
All right. Thank you.